right, today is another... Let's see, hold on. Welcome to the stand-up. We are doing dev horror scenes. Everybody is laughing at me because this is take two. Well, guess what? We are going to hear some of the craziest stories. TJ has guaranteed that Trash would love his dev horror story. So, TJ, why don't you start us off?
Okay, so here you go. I'll tell the story for real.
Anyways, sorry.
This is my first real job outside of school. I'm working at Epic, the medical health records company, which is important to the story to know that it's not Fortnite. And I worked on an application called Datalink. Datalink is basically a way that we turned like insurance claims into medical data for you. So like Trash, if you were traveling around and you broke your arm or something, right? You jujitsued and stubbed your toe, but you were in like Florida instead, right? You would make a claim, and then the insurance company would send those claims back to like your home hospital network so that it would be like, hey, your doctor needs to know that you broke your toe at some point, because people just literally forget, right? So it's like you broke your arm, you got this surgery, whatever, all this other stuff happens out of network. They want to know back at your home place so you can get better care. The problem with this is twofold. First one, it's a dev horror story from before I was there. Sales promised that it would be done in 3 months. Not a doable project in 3 months. Took 9 months or something like this. This was before I got hired. To be clear, Trash, because I already know you're going to say it's my fault. I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. I wasn't
sure,
there.
Sure.
It took three times as long as they said it was going to take, and then they had to delete the product because it didn't work and was putting patients in danger the first time around. They literally got all the hospitals to remove it, and they did a new version later. Okay? So it was off to a rocky start for round one. I get hired. We're in the midst of round two. It's working like reasonable now for most cases. It's kind of working. So I imagine that there are a lot of horror stories that I didn't get to hear about round one. But here's the thing that happened that was that I know Trash is going to laugh at. I know it for sure. So
we get
these things are called patient safety escalations, right? Which means somebody reported something crazy happening in a hospital because that's your thing. It's not, did we, you know, like stream the wrong movie or something? It's like, did we accidentally potentially kill somebody? Right. So just to be clear, before we get out there, this never actually hurt anybody. We were confident that we did a whole bunch of research afterwards and anything. But the thing that we found, the reason that this got surfaced, is a doctor was looking at a new mother's chart and was going through the chart. Just recently had her baby, going through all the procedures, and about three quarters of the way down on the chart, he sees an external procedure done on her, and what does it say? Circumcision. The reason this happens is because when you have a baby, a lot of times insurance companies charge everything to the mom's insurance claim ID. So they do a circumcision on a little baby. We input the claims. We say, oh, look, it's on mom's insurance ID. You put that right on her chart. She gets back the week after having a baby. She's at her well child visit. So it turns out, so we find this out. So this then spawns an entire, like, big problem, because we're like, holy cow, we could be putting procedures on the wrong people. So we're looking into everything. We're like calling, you know, industry. Like, we have a bunch of people on staff who are industry experts and everything. Obviously, like, this one, it's not so bad. It's chill. It's like, yeah, it was obvious. We fixed it and it was good. The one that was much more like potentially dangerous in this scenario, but also due to a bunch of other Swiss cheese factors, like, if they actually got covered, it never happened.
Developers, are you tired of code reviews that just say, looks good to me, or here's seven things I need you to change that are irrelevant to the PR? Well, meet CodeRabbit, AI reviews right inside your editor. Starting with VS Code, Cursor, and WinSurf, sorry, no Vim yet, hit review and bam, outcomes, feedback, even before you open a pull request. CodeRabbit can help flag bugs that your vibe coding with your LLM bots missed. And with one easy click, it can send all the context back to your favorite agentic tools for quick fixes line by line. CodeRabbit offers a generous free tier with up to 50 code reviews per day. Grab the extension now at coderabbit.link/primogen-vscode. Links in the description. And ship cleaner code today.
The other crazy one for this, which is why you don't let sales drive what features you're going to do, is there's a bunch of problems that exist that you need industry experts to actually tell you, is when you get a transplant. So like, Trash, if you gave your liver to Prime, generally, at least in the U.S., the insurance company just puts the person that the procedure is going on. If you're the donor, it always puts it on the donee. What's the person who receives? The recipient.
Okay.
It always just puts the claims on that one. So, this didn't ever actually happen, but, like, it could have if we had had the scenario. But it was literally, like, it would be, like, donate liver, got liver, right in a row. Or, like, because both of those claims would be associated with the recipient claimant ID. Because the problem is medical insurance data is not supposed to be medical data, right? So there you go, Trash. The main one that I knew you would laugh at from that, though, is new mother gets circumcision procedure on chart.
Dude, I don't know if I could ever... I feel like working like in that industry is just... Those bugs are just like catastrophic, I feel like, right?
Oh, yeah. It's it's not... I didn't like it. That's why I left. Like, I mean, like, Epic was fine to work at, I thought. Like, I actually liked working there all right, like, and everything. But, dude, when you have literally, like, multiple hundred millions of patients and, like, all of their medical data is going through the system you're working on, it's a very different experience than, like, oops, we, like, right, deleted a document on accident, or, like, some photos got lost or something like that. Like, everything is, like, potentially life or death.
So,
yeah.
So now I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
So what's your testing process before you, like, roll this stuff out?
Oh, I mean, how long do you want to go, Trash? It's actually kind of, like, you know, it's kind of interesting.
I mean, it doesn't have to be, like, in-depth. I'm just curious, like, yeah, is it, like, pretty hardcore or what? I assume it is.
So part of it that's kind of, like... So basically, like, at Epic, generally speaking, they were changing this a little bit when I left, but they were moving more towards, like, closer to a rolling release. Like, every 3 months, they would cut a new version of Epic, and they would try and get people on. But, like, up until then, they had basically, like, you know, every 3 years would be, like, a new version of Epic, right? Like, classic enterprise software. You've got Epic 2014, Epic 2017. But okay, so for the testing thing, so what we would do is we had these big versions, and then you would need to, if you wanted to get a package sent back to people, you had to create like this thing called a special upgrade, and they were like basically patches that got applied. And so we would have effectively like multiple, like main branches effectively, like is they're like environments where it would be like, oh, this is Epic 2016 with like the latest versions applied. And you would have some like ability to say, oh, they've installed like these things, or this one depends on this, and it would do a whole graph and all that stuff. And it, like, actually lots of really impressive tech like in that stack. But so basically what we would have is, for anything you wanted to change, any change ever that ever got landed, no matter how small, no matter how big, you would do that in like our dev environment. This is just if you want to do it for like the main one. So like, first we'll just cover mains, like our current version of Epic that's coming out later. You would do all your dev in this big main, like, shared environment. It has tons of test data, like, loaded in, like, big scale, try out all this different stuff, whatever. You can play around with it, all these good things. So you got to get approval. We had a bunch of stuff for this, design docs, etc., project tracking, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
For once, it's a product where you think, okay, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, most of the time, you're like, guys, can we not do design docs? I just want to try the feature. But for this one, like, for the example I said, if we had a design doc earlier for some of these things and had, like, pulled in people from insurance and billing, they probably would have called this out. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could have been a solved issue. Anyways. Mm-hmm. So then you do all your dev in this environment. We had our own whole custom source code, deployment, IDE, review thing, everything. All of it was built in because, like, Epic's old. It started in the 70s. So they built all this stuff all by themselves forever. And so then you would get here, you would get past dev, and then you'd have someone do code review. You'd go back and forth. You'd have to get it. They'd have to sign off. Which, like, a literal sign. It wouldn't let you merge unless you got sign off from people, stuff like that, right? Then it goes to QA1. QA1, you get a QA person from your department. QA environment has a bunch of different setup, different environments, different things, different, kind of like a different deployment. It's completely detached from dev. They go through, they do all their testing. They've got a test script. They've got regression tests. They got a bunch of stuff like this that they run. Obviously, like, there's also automated testing and things that we did too, but, like, you get a QA person to go test your thing. Once that QA1 goes, and if they find anything, you go back and forth, blah, blah, blah. You potentially need Dev1 to review again, depending how big the changes are. QA can ask, like, yo, you need changes. QA1 gets finished. You have code review number two. Code review number two happens. Different developer. Can't be the same one as last time.
Code reviewer or, like, testing?
Code review. So we did code review one, QA1, code review two. Completely different software developer.
How's that make sense? Like, what if the code review two asks for changes, and then now you have to go back through that whole testing process?
Yeah, if there's significant enough changes, you'll just kick it back. You'll kick it back to dev one. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yes, if it gets that far, then you got to kick it back to dev one.
What about the code reviewer one? Does he get in trouble because he missed code reviewer two's phone?
Maybe if it was a pattern. The people who are code reviewing are on your, like, app. So they're, like, on your team. So, like, we had the data link team. The data link team was, like, you know, at various times between, like, 5 and 10 devs. So it's not like you would know. If somebody's always just, you know, rubber stamping dev one, get them out. Get them out. Trip to Karen's office. Put them on PIP. Can't be messing around with that kind of stuff there. And so then dev two completes. Now it moves into a completely separate environment. QA2, a different QA-er reviews it. Everything checks out. It's good. Then it gets merged into basically, like, the mainline, like, current branch for where all the code is and what's going on. So that's, like, the process for just getting, like, one change done and getting into, like, the current version of Epic. And then, like, that would eventually get deployed out to different hospitals whenever they're ready to upgrade. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Then, though, Trash, if this was a fix for an important bug or a feature that we wanted to send back to people without them having to do the whole thing, you'd have to do this entire process again, starting from a different initial branch. Sometimes could be auto-applied, but sometimes not, because, like, maybe there's code you use that doesn't exist in the 2016 version, but now we're in the 2020 version. You go back. You got to go do that whole same process again, and it gets put out basically as a new patch, a special upgrade, you know, special upgrade 37,982 or something like this, right? And then that one could get sent back. So you repeat that whole process again if you need to get it shipped.
What's that average release time, like, weeks?
Like, you're saying from 1PR starting to finished?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, obviously it depends on, like, the significance of the changes.
But yeah. I mean, it super depends. I mean, one of the things that I did, so this, you'll think this is kind of funny too. Sorry, we'll just randomly talk about this, and maybe we can tell some other horror stories at the end.
We're off the rails.
Tell us your horror story. So one of the things about release process.
Yeah. That is a horror of software dev, to be fair.
That is a horror story. Have you ever had code take months to hit
prod? I actually have a tangent on this process that's going on here. Like, this isn't that far.
Yeah, like, right, for the, you know, for the vertical that Epic's operating in, you're, like, happy to hear that you do all of these things. You're like, oh, it moves slow. You're like, okay, well, that's good.
This is good.
So, like, one of the things I built a little bit before I left, I actually built a, like, kind of scuffed version of Telescope, like the NeoVim Fuzzy Finder.
Right.
It's the thing that inspired me to later try it out when I was done working there. But not for NeoVim, because we didn't use NeoVim. I had Epic Studio while I was there when I was writing some of this code. Like, we had our own IDE, which was connected to all the environments and all this other stuff. Although I was literally trying to write my own competing NeoVim plugin distribution. Story for a different day. Now I forgot. Oh, the telescope thing. So I built this like mini telescope thing to help our QA search for a bunch of like scripts and other stuff that they could run. And then I built a like way for them to test data link, basically using like Excel files. Because the problem was all the stuff we were doing before was like this crazy manual process where you do something like load claims into the data warehouse. Data warehouse, you have to wait until it ETLs back into our claims in the actual Epic environment. Then that Epic environment, you have to test and do things. And then, right? So it's like, it could literally take hours or days for like some of these changes to go through, but you could force them manually. Like if you knew what you were doing, right? So I wrote this thing that would be like, you could put in the claims in like an Excel table you wanted as like an input sheet. And then like you would have an output sheet in Excel and you could say the things you wanted to see in the patient's chart. And so you could write out all those test cases. And then I built a telescope like fuzzy finder thing so they could search through like hundreds or thousands of these like test cases.
That's pretty cool.
Later. Yeah, so it literally changed things from like something that used to take multiple days for QA to test something manually into like less than an hour and automatic, which was really like that part was pretty cool. And the deal like this too. The reason that I found that I was inspired for this idea, I'm just poking around in random old code that we have in this crazy language called Mumps, which is also a software horror story. I can tell you about this after this trash. And we had our own custom Excel parsing libraries that I discovered. And I was like, well, that's cool. What could you do with that? And it was literally like, oh, we could just make it so that QA can like write tests in Excel. And then like we can write code to handle these things. But just happened because I was poking around in some random ways and found Excel parsing libraries.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on over there.
Oh, yeah.
There is a fate worse than death, and that fate is using a company's custom IDE. Like, that just feels
It was fine.
That just feels awful.
It was better than VS Code, dude. It's 1,000 times better than VS Code. Like, no joke. Like, it's not it was great. It connected to every environment automatically. It would, like, you could see diffs across environments, and you could check out all this stuff. It was dude. We had actual code review. You could like push this thing and you could go check out the code. You were in the environment automatically. None of this dumb, your environment scuffed. You're trying to do a dumb code review in GitHub and GitHub won't even load the entire diff and all this other stuff. Like, dude, most companies, like the experience is subpar using VS Code compared to what they had at Epic using a 1970s programming language called Mumps at a healthcare place, which is also funny.
That's all proprietary? That whole IDE was proprietary?
Yeah, yeah, they made it themselves. Yeah, they were just
trash.
Like...
That's a secret sauce over there.
Well, it's not...
I'm going to go get a job at Epic just to check this out.
Yeah, I mean, like, Mumps is a bad language. Like, it is. Like, it's true. They were working on a project to make TypeScript compile to Mumps, which was crazy. Mm. And, like, it was working. They just rewrote the back end where instead of emitting JavaScript, it could emit Mumps instead.
I've never heard of Mumps. What the heck is
Yeah,
that?
Well, it's kind of like NoSQL, but scripting.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, I can visualize it now. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like,
somehow it
honestly,
made it
most companies.
To understand what it is. Can you describe it in a different possible way than that?
That's literally what it is. So it's a key value store scripting language. So you can, like, do business logic stuff on sparsely populated data sets. And you can, like, write it in the same language that you're doing all your other stuff. So, like, almost all the back end was in Mumps, and it's, like, a key value store language.
Was the TypeScript to Mumps compiler, was it called, like, MRR vaccine or something like that?
No, it should have been, though. No, they just called it TSM.
That's how I was going with this.
Yeah, they tried. So they never called it Mumps. You only call the language M because you don't want to keep reminding doctors and hospital people that your medical stack
mumps.
Is written on Mumps. Yeah. Well, dude, it's the classic programmer thing. Some programmers made this up at like Massachusetts University Medical something, right? So they were like, guys, no, it'd be funny. Like, we should call this programming language Mumps. And then they, because like the acronym's not even that good. You know, like it doesn't actually line up. The programmers knew. They were working at a university hospital. They made this up and were like, bruh, pretty funny calling it Mumps.
I can't believe I spent my days doing this. What the hell's wrong with me? This is crazy.
I'm going down a Mumps rabbit hole right now.
Yeah, Trash. You know what? We can do WTF mumps, and I'll show you a bunch of crazy stuff in the language. It would be so funny. I will say this is one of those things where I'll just be like, the serious note is like, a bunch of people are like, oh, I can't ship productive software in this stack, blah, 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 whatever. Guys, Epic has made more money than you can possibly dream of. They're going to stay private forever. It made Judy many billions of dollars. It's like crazy, literally changed the world. And it's a language no one else in the entire universe writes.
Yeah.
Like you can ship productive software in other things. Like it's just, they deliver business value. They are doing stuff that nobody else is doing. Like, so just too bad. You have to write Python at work or meh. Yeah, if you're solving the business problem, then it's going to be okay. So, and actually, there were some things that were very unique and interesting about mumps that were actually kind of good. Like, it's good for sparse data sets. That's medical records. Like, dude, medical records are sparse data sets.
Yeah.
Prime, you and I have probably almost no overlapping data in our health record. You know what I'm saying, right? Like, it's like, okay, we have maybe like that we got vitals taken the last times that we went to the doctor, but like nothing else is the same.
Right.
Yeah, so just trying to do like some
go to the doctor, but you know, I live in South Dakota. We don't even believe in doctors here. Okay.
It's just when the guy who comes out to check if the cows are okay, he takes your blood pressure too.
Yeah. I sit in line with the dairy cow.
Okay, Trash, I'll come back with the presentation of WTF mumps for you.
Oh my goodness.
And then I'll give you the rundown. I'll give you the rundown.
Oh,
I know, Trash. Okay. I know. I'm not.
That was a long. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore at this point.
Trash, what else do you want to know about Epic? This can just be your time to ask me about that, and then we'll just be done.
we need to preface that.
No,
like,
I want to hear Trash's horror story. Trash is I got good ones. And so I'm just like, okay, lay it down. I want to hear it.
I want to do like a round robin. Like, do you guys have more than one? I'm assuming.
That was the one that I wanted to tell, was that we accidentally put circumcision on the mom's chart.
I mean, I have like a list that I can go down. So I'm, you know, I'm analyzing the list here.
Pick one.
Okay,
Josh,
I have one.
You have a list of these? Do you write them down after they happen? Of like, this is a memeable moment in my career?
No, these are like early in my career. All right, these are early. Well, yeah, okay, I got one.
All right,
I'm not
hit
gonna us, name,
Trash.
I'm not gonna say any company names.
Netflix.
But I will say it's not my current company, 100%.
Government contracting.
okay. Are you guys ready for this? Okay. So.
Oh yeah.
So, one would think you want to load test and prod, but we did, and I'm gonna tell you why. So when you look at sites and it's, you know, populated by some data that looks simple, but behind the scenes it's typically not. You have like different data sources and other things like processing it, ETL, whatever, what have you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as simple as like, let me just query one database and all that stuff is just there. This is like, you know, 20 plus databases potentially. I'm not saying that's exactly what's happening in this case, but let's just imagine that's the case. So usually when you have all these data sources and you have to kind of aggregate that, you usually use some level of caching, right? Because you don't want to hit those data sources constantly, especially if you have a high traffic site, which would be like in this case, I don't know, but it's pretty high. It's pretty dang high. So
like tens of visitors a day or what?
At least.
Okay.
At
least. That's a lot.
At least.
Sick. That's at more least. Than I've ever done. So that's
so,
cool.
So we wanted to, obviously when you load test, you just want to, when you stress test, you just want to see how your infrastructure reacts. So we did load test in our lower environments, but it's like that classic case of where obviously your prod environment is just not like your test environment or your staging. So you just can't get that data. And which is like literally the classic issue in like any tech company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, well, we need some real results. And we were conscious of like how much it can handle. We did everything like we could to be like, okay, is this a good idea or is this a bad idea?
but it sounds like it's still going to be a bad idea.
Yeah, you flip a coin and there was heads on both sides and the heads was a bad idea. so check this out. So this site, we do heavy amount of caching because of the amount of requests we get a second.
Okay.
And what we do is we wrote our own internal like cache buster for like specific paths and stuff. But we only clear the cache at low peak times because when you clear that cache for like 1 second without much traffic, it's just like pretty catastrophic. For whatever reason, and this, we were testing like, not like peak time, because that's just almost as dumb as load testing in prod. But we were load testing like at a relatively low like active time, like during work hours or whatever, because people aren't.
Naturally.
I'm not going to say what kind of site it was. But for whatever reason, the cache got cleared in one of these instances at the same time we load tested. And it took down our site for about 30 to 45 minutes, which is like absolutely unacceptable. One, you can't log into the site. Two, you can't sign up to pay us money to get to the site. And like, as soon as it happened, we started seeing tweets. We started seeing things on LinkedIn. And like me, it was just me. It was like me and two other engineers. We were just sitting on a call. And we're like, yo, is dot whatever working? He's like, nah, man. And I was like, refreshing. I was like, we just kind of sat there like on a call, like literally like, just like we're doing now. We're kind of just kind of staring at the space. And we're just like, okay. So try refreshing again. We're just like.
So like, hold on. Why did it take so long? Like, could you just restart things? Like, what went down that took so long to get back up?
It's because it's so connected. Like, it just goes so, like, it takes down, it's a basically dominoes of different infrastructure.
Okay, right? Microservices. I've heard of these. Okay, yeah.
Basically, right? So when the cache clears, all of those systems downstream get overwhelmed and they just topple over. And not only does it take out, like, prod, it takes down other systems that are dependent on those systems. So it's kind of just like, it was, like, literally the worst thing that could possibly happen to me. We didn't get in trouble. I mean, it was kind of like a, but like, you know.
I mean, you know, it
was at least top three worst moments of my life.
Okay, so when you said load testing, what were you load testing, or how does that work out? What were you doing that that caused this? I'm still a little bit nebulous on that.
So we were testing like the very
fresh request for everything.
So we have like, so let's just talk about, we have layers of the cake. The top most layer is the layer we own, which is built on top of the caching and all the underlying pieces. So we assumed the caching was at right below our piece, right? And the top layer is not that important. Like, everything below that is, like, the most important part. But we had, like, some logic, and we wanted to just kind of, like, test the CPU readings and see, like, how it would react to, like, X number of requests. But,
it
I mean,
reacted.
The whole, like, it reacted. It's just, it was like a freak accident where the cache has never been cleared. Okay? That's all I'm saying. But we were just testing, like, just literally, do we have to, how many containers do we need up at, like, X amount of time, right? Just to have like a steady baseline. And that's pretty much what we were looking for. And it turned out that was a bad idea. Like we load tested in staging test, but it's just not the same. It's not the same.
So, Trash, the thing I wanted to ask though, you said that was in your top three worst moments. I'm now very curious. What are the top three?
Yeah. Give us.
I have another really bad one.
Give us one more.
Okay.
This was probably my third year into professional software development, where I mainly just wrote PLSQL. Like, all I did was just do database stuff.
Oh, yeah, Trash.
So
data warehouse life.
Yeah, all right. I wrote like this whole pipeline that basically maps soldiers to sign up for classes. So we have like these benefits that allow soldiers to, you know, sign up for classes at these whatever universities that will accept them. And based on like their zip code or their status or whatever, they can go some certain direction. That's not important. But I built like this whole mapping system of just like stored procedures. And the TLDR is like, basically, on sign-up day, it's pretty much havoc. Like, everyone's like, I want the, you know, when you sign for classes, you want to get the best class.
Yep.
Or you have the 11 schedule.
11 a.m. or later.
Yeah, you don't want to get the 8 a.m. one. You just don't.
Yeah, you want all my classes on Tuesday, and I want, like, a 2-day school.
I'm going to take 4 days off so I can get a lot of work done. And then Monday night rolls around.
But let me preface this. We tested the bejesus out of this thing. As one would expect, because people sign up for school. And I also want to preface, like, it wasn't just, like, all me. Like, it was, like, a shared responsibility of a team.
It was all you.
Okay. It's not like, hey, we need to write this. And they just looked at me and you're like, it's all on you, buddy. Right. But I wrote like a lot of the core stuff. And I was like super into like SQL. Anyways, we tested the crap out of this. We launch it. It goes through like a big testing process.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Stored procedures. And it goes through it goes through its testing phase, just like with Teej, right? We have like UAT, code reviews, and we actually have like multiple layers of testing before it even gets to UAT, which is user acceptance testing for those who don't know. So we're very confident, you know, like 99% confident this was going to go very well. We were like in a war room on like the day it's launching. And this is like launch day is basically like, or not necessarily launch day, but the day of everyone enrolling. And we have like all these dashboards up. I have like the database. I'm like monitoring the database. And initially things were going well. And I was like, cool. Like I kind of looked at the data. We had kind of had like a whole like diagram of like how the flow should look. And we started getting like the initial ones, not too much traffic because, you know, time zone super early, but some people are like do stuff super early. And I was like, okay, like early signups or something. So we could see like things were being mapped correctly. But like on the main day when like everybody was signing up, for whatever reason, the mapping just started going the wrong way. It's like when you go down a slide at a water park and I don't know, somehow that slide makes a wrong turn to the deep end. And we just started seeing.
It's not how slides work.
Like,
what is that
analogy?
That's a horrible analogy.
Trash, run
it
back.
I was going to turn it into. It's like when your veins in your arm, they make a wrong turn and they go to like
that's
your fingers.
That's also not how veins work.
Those are my two choices, and I chose the slide one because it was less worse. But okay, so the errors that happened, it's not obvious. It's not like you have error rates for things like go into the wrong thing. You kind of just have to look at the data and understand like, oh, that's kind of weird, right?
Yep.
So I had all these like pre-written queries just for like certain scenarios, just to like spot check the data. And I started noticing, obviously the data was wrong. I was like, okay. And then we also built our own like CRM system and the system just started getting overwhelmed with tickets and people were getting pissed.
Yeah.
But anyways, like I wasn't there to like see the whole process unfold, but in the war room, we were just like, holy shit, what the hell? Everyone's getting signed up for the wrong thing. And it's not something we could just roll back because it's kind
of
just done. Because
of stored procedures?
You know how that goes. So I don't even remember what we had to do, but we had to just basically accept what was happening. You just had to accept it. And then you just had to fix it later. You know what I mean? It's like one of those. So if I'm like signing up for classes, it's not like they're gonna go up to you and be like, "You got to stop signing up for classes." It's just not that kind of scenario. It's basically the person that's helping the person is like, "Oh, that's weird. We'll get back to you." And then that's kind of what happens. So we had to just understand where it went wrong so we could kind of reverse engineer that logic and put people in the right place. It wasn't like as difficult as you would think because, you know, these people had profiles, you knew like their PII or their information.
Okay.
So you could kind of, based off of like zip code and stuff, you'd be like, oh, okay, this is mapped clearly because of X and X. But like at the time, you know, everyone's just like, well, this is not what I signed up for. This isn't the class I wanted. This isn't the time slot I wanted. So a lot of people's schedules got messed up, right? But it was weird. I remember sitting in the corner of the room, had my feet up. I was just like very relaxed, very calm. And everyone just kind of looks at me and they're just like, why is it doing that? And I was like, well, I don't know. and I literally just had to sit there and just watch it happen the whole day while I was trying to reverse engineer why it's happening. Cause like I said, we couldn't stop it. It just had to happen. You know, it's like a car coming towards you and you just have to just let it keep going.
You can walk out of here. That's
not what happens in that scenario. I don't know either. Well, you can't stop a car coming out. You're going to get smashed eventually.
You can move.
It's like jumping off a cliff, and then as you're going towards the water,
in wet cement.
You can do.
There you go. That's an analogy
Tidal wave finally works. Anyways.
Dude, Trash, you're very bad at analogies. You should just stay talking about stories. They're way better.
So
your stories great about them.
No, keep the analogies coming, please.
I think this was like 2010, 2011 analogies. When this happened. This was like my first, like the team was supportive. Okay, I didn't feel like I was like shamed or anything, but it was like my first experience of having a catastrophic failure. So, you know, lessons learned. And again, it was a team effort. Not all on me, but kind of all on me at the same time. So,
Josh, you're not up in your case, buddy.
Well, you know what I said? I said, well, who tested this? All right? That's what I said. I was like, well, how did this get past testing?
How did this get past testing?
Classic rebuttal.
Hey, you really can't. You really, I mean, did you also, were you in charge of testing, Trash?
No. I have a funny story. Good, I have a funny story. Just a side tangent. This project that I'm talking about, the passwords that our QA has been using, like that we had like a password sheet. Those have been.
That's
those,
where you learned it from.
I literally use those passwords.
I was kidding. I didn't think that was actually.
They were so complex. Well, they're kind of complex, but I typed them so many times because I would use the QA accounts that they became part of like my being, and I just started using those passwords.
Oh my gosh!
Trash. Like what? How so complex
the
are they? Trash.
That's
give
the
me an
lore
example.
To my password.
Give me an
password.
Like
not
an
even
old one that you don't use anymore. Hit me with one.
Old password?
Yeah, no, I was kidding. I was trying
somehow,
to bait him into
that's some, yeah. I'm not going to do that. But
Trash,
it would
don't
somehow,
do it.
I'm,
don't do
yeah.
it. We cannot leak your one password, buddy. Please. Help yourself. Save yourself.
Yeah, there's the lore for the one password.
Okay.
This project.
Okay.
I can't believe we uncovered lore. We're going to have to tell Casey this when it comes
to
Casey.
I got more stories,
really
too, after Prime goes.
Like that. Yeah.
We got some, I got more stories.
Part.
Yeah. Prime, let's hear one from you, and then I want to save a few for Casey. We can run this back again. I want to do a part two where Casey gives us some, too.
Okay, so obviously the one that I can't do is the one where I created that really horrible bug for Netflix that was the that got a named attack, the repulsive grizzly attack. I've already told that story.
Yes.
So
we already know Falcor. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we already know Falcor existed. Okay,
more so like Failcor. Am I right, Chad?
Failcor.
All right, so I'll tell you this story. Okay, so...
Thanks, Trash.
I was doing PHP startups for a long time. And in PHP land, at least back in the day, when you had a static variable would be for the life of the request because every request ran in its own process. And so I kind of had this mentality that requests, you know, like static was just associated with requests for whatever reason. You know, things happen, you know, you just are so used to a specific environment. You kind of forget the meaning of what static is, and so it just, like, happens in a specific way. And
you're saying because it restarts the PHP process every time,
yeah,
like,
every
request, right?
is its
for the
own
people
PHP
who don't know.
Process, right? So that's yeah, that's why, right. like, old PHP was so slow. And so yeah. I remember going to Netflix, and I had to kind of come up with logging for all the UI because we just didn't have logging. Like, we had no logging for anything. And how this got started is that we started releasing these originals. And what would happen is that we need to have an original, and we need to have its art for just like the box art. And then there's also things called roar panels. Trash, I think you probably remember roar panels. Roar panels mm-hmm. were the tall ones. And then you also had these like ultra long boxes. And then you also had it in Korean. You also had it in, you know, Portuguese. You also had it like – so it had all these like sub variants as well. So every single image for a show had – literally like 100 assets related to it, and we just had no idea what places the world just didn't have those images. And so my boss mm-hmm. was just like, can you fix that problem? And so I was like, dude, I got this. I got a great idea. So I went out to go come up with like a really good idea, and my first swing at it is that I just forgot that static is not on a request level thing. It's just that I was so used to the PHPs at that time that I started writing it that way. And so that was like a whole situation that came in because for like the next day, I'm just like, why am I like, I just made a request, but I'm in Brazil. Like, I know this is from me. This can't be real. And the thing is that mistake is really stupid and small. But the thing that really got me wasn't that I made that mistake. It's just like, hey, you've just been in PHP land for too long. You made a small mistake and all that. But my boss at the time, Jeff Wagner, was just like, this is ridiculous. Open up the code. And I opened up the code. He's like, dude, your variable's static. And like having your boss who doesn't program point out the most obvious thing in the universe, like, yeah, it's for the lifetime of an application. It was like by far the most embarrassing moment of my lifetime to have a non-programming person walk up and be like, hey, your code's wrong and it's obvious. Like, I can see it from here and I don't even program. It just felt so horrible. And I just remember, like, that was by far, like, the part that I was just, like, the most personally sad about things is that I made that mistake, and it was so simple not to make that mistake. Oh, my gosh. And so my stories are much smaller and nicer than yours. I've actually had very few, like, production problems. So I don't have a lot of these stories.
Except for the big one.
Yeah,
the one where you took down a big company.
Except for the really, really big one.
Yeah, because I was always usually in charge of writing, like, the libraries. Like, that was just a library.
Right.
Yeah, so if you, mm-hmm. like, Trash, I'm sure at some point, if you were in the UI side, you ran into, like, the Atlas Mantis logger for all of Groovy and all that. Mm-hmm. That was, like, my first attempt at making all the UIs have a unified ability to log anything about them, which we had none. Right. And the reason why we had none, fun side stories, I went to the Atlas team, which, if you don't know Atlas is like a tag storage database where if you have an event, you can put a bunch of tags, and the combinatorics of the tags is how many different types of data will be stored inside the database. And so that way you can have, like, instant lookup. Like, I want to slice the data in all these different dimensions. And so you can see over the last 2 days, a billion requests, you can see that in, like, absolutely no time. So it's like a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. But I went to the team and I was just like, hey, you know, I'm writing this stuff for the UI and I really need access to these APIs. And they're like, oh, you guys had access at one point. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, we don't let the UI have access to these APIs anymore. And I'm like, why? And they're like, they spent like $1 million in a day and we took it away from them.
You can't play with this
You're
toy
You're not
anymore.
Allowed to play with this toy. So I actually had to program things in there to be like, that's probably not a good idea to store, right? Like, we had to be very careful on these things, and I had to get things whitelisted just to be like, only these values the UI is allowed to store. Don't even try that with me, TJ. You know, I'm going to deny list that request, TJ. So that was a lot of fun. My only other really big one was, I've said the story once or twice, but I think it was Lady Gaga who was having a movie come out on Netflix, and there was like this big countdown billboard, and I was in charge of rewriting the billboard and kind of getting it more into a modernized version of React where we had a little bit better, like, kind of layout of everything. And I just get done with it, and we have this big countdown billboard, and they had all the studio execs and Lady Gaga and all those people getting ready for the billboard to have this, like, countdown. And when it counts down, it was going to, like, show her movie, and it was going to be so awesome and all that kind of stuff. But I just, like, messed up the testing, and when it went down to zero, the whole page would freeze. And so, like, so I just, like, totally broke the product. But it was only, like, 7 people who saw it, which was just, like, just the execs and the people who were concerned about it. Dude, I just broke it in front of them, and I received very angry emails from that one.
Oh, no.
Nice. The 7 most important people.
Yeah, it was just like,
I know, right?
We even looked at the stats. It was literally like 12. Like, it was like such a small amount, because it was, you had to, like, reload the page within like 30 seconds of the video going to go live. Like, so it was like such a small fraction of people that would even have the chance to see it. It was just all the people who needed to see it saw it not work. Like, if they would just refreshed it a second later, it would have just, like, been like, oh, yeah, it would have worked.
It was just the hierarchy up the company from you to the top. Who saw it?
If Netflix was like the Illuminati triangle, it was the eyeball that saw it. I was in trouble on that one. So that one was very embarrassing. That's pretty much all my embarrassing stories are, those ones. I don't really have any other embarrassing stories. I really didn't. I almost never broke prod.
I got like a couple that aren't like terrible, but they're kind of like, oh, now I know, and I won't do that again kind of thing. So here's one. This one's not my fault, and I hope whoever...
To be fair, none of them have been your fault so far, Trash. Everyone else kind of played a part in that.
How are you always avoiding responsibility?
It's usually not my fault.
Yeah.
I'm going to preface this just in case, because I know some of them watch you for whose fault this is. So not blaming you. It's a team effort. But, but it was your fault, not mine. But... So this was, I'm not even going to say the year because it's just going to be even more obvious if they're watching this. So we were launching a new site, a site that I was not a part of writing, in prefaces.
Stop avoiding responsibility.
I'm just kidding. Kind of. But so This was early Next.js days. I didn't even know what Next.js was. So this was, I think...
I don't even know what Next.js is.
Yeah, it's that Vercel thing. So this was like when everyone was like, oh my god, server-side rendering, even though it's been a thing forever. It just became more accessible to people that didn't know what it was. So it was like the new hotness, and they wanted to use this new framework. So everything was just server-side rendering, and...
Yep.
What that means is we basically just wrote like a million queries at request time.
Isomorphic. And they probably were using terms isomorphic heavily during that time.
Bro, is that isomorphic?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Dude,
is
that
I'm
isomorphic
not sure.
JavaScript?
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
I got to look up the definition every time.
All right. Yeah, so we're using GraphQL, and GraphQL had like some of these APIs that would basically crawl your tree, look for all the promises, and then make sure all those promises are resolved before it returns some data. But that's a big problem when you have such a nested tree and every single part of that tree needs some part of data. You're just requesting like a million times before it can actually render anything. So we are doing a brand new rework of a site, a very popular site. And we're like, on this day, brand new launch, brand new feel, brand new brand. You're going to love it. We launched this site. It was a client-side rendered site, I think, before that. Or it was better than what it was when we did it at that point. It looked better. We made it look better, but it did not perform better. So
oh,
we launched
nice.
It.
That's like the most classic rewrite of all time when it comes to
exactly. It looked rewrites. Cool. It looked cool, but a complete disaster to like click and wait like 5 seconds before it even navigates, right?
Chat is saying it's balls.yoga. It is not balls.yoga. I vibe coded that myself, chat. Trash was not involved.
Yes, that was a TJ vibe code special.
Okay, so stop that. Stop.
Yeah, you stop.
Anyways, continue, Trash.
So before we did this whole like Next.js fiasco, we had another sister site, and we used something that was called Prerender. And if you're not familiar, Prerender is basically a bot that will crawl your site and then cache those results for like a Google bot or something. So if you don't necessarily need to server-side render anything. You can just pay for this bot or have a bot that just sends back cache results. So we had something like that, but we switched to this new paradigm of using this framework, and we were able to handle a pretty high number of requests per second. But when we launched this site, our request per second per container went down to 10. It can only handle 10 requests per container. And we were trying to scale. And we were trying to see the containers spin up as fast as they could. But we were just shedding so much traffic. But imagine a container only taking 10 requests per second for a pretty simple site. It was actually very catastrophic, and it was really damaging to like the team and the company.
10 requests per second is like impressively slow.
Dude, it was like 10 to 15. And since we couldn't scale up enough containers fast enough, we were obviously going to shed a bunch of traffic, and that had a bunch of other downstream effects. But man, it was literally so embarrassing.
We're serving multiple digits of RPS.
It was so embarrassing. And I had no idea like how this framework worked. And they're just like, we got to fix this now. We didn't. Clearly, it wasn't a bug that we fixed immediately. It took us like a week to actually resolve it. But it was just... It was a nightmare and one of the most stressful moments of my life for sure. But just to watch it like release or all just sitting there and just watching.
How,
like,
Trash, how was it that nobody knew it was only going to serve approximately 10 requests?
People had no idea back then about.
We didn't stress test it. Like when you're in your staging environments, right?
Okay, so it was just because the database in prod was so much bigger than the other one that like loading these made it take.
So I wasn't part of like the testing process before we released it. I was just part of the team and kind of watching it unfold.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly we didn't stress test this. But I mean, the classic story is when you usually release stuff, you just have one QA engineer go into test. Click around, things load. And then once they load, that's kind of the end of the story. We never really think about, oh, we should probably load test this with, 50,000 RPS or something, right?
Yeah.
And go from there. So it was just like a classic mishap of that. I don't think anyone... It was also because that whole paradigm was new to the team.
Yeah, that makes
like,
sense.
Just like, cool, SEO, this is sick. Heck yeah. But yeah, I remember watching the graphs, and everything's just like exponentially up, and then you just see our like containers trying to spin up and keep up and just keep going down. It was a disaster. Yeah, lesson learned.
What was the lesson to learn, Trash? Don't server-side render or what?
What is the lesson? Yeah.
Don't try to query literally every piece of data to serve a simple page, you know?
Smart, okay.
But that is a good not lesson. Like the modern Silicon Valley way,
yeah.
though.
That's also, yeah, but that's also a classic GraphQL problem, too.
Yes,
people just think
is.
That it's on the graph. I can just, they have no idea which resolvers are actually very heavy. Mm-hmm. So they're just like, oh, it's in the schema, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I don't know. It's aggregating
the data.
They
probably used like 1/10 of the fields anyways. Like they're just putting all the fields in because they're like, well, whatever. I mean, it's in the schema. I'm going to put it in. It's fine. Yeah, yeah. This is a classic GraphQL
issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even if you can get like really precise data, you still have to look it up in a table. It's not like you're getting much out when you're just like, I'm going to go to a huge table and perform a bunch of really bad queries, but I'm only pulling out one piece of data that I'm going to use. It's still like, yeah, this whole experience is really, really bad.
Can we just end the episode?
Boot up today. Vibe coding errors on my screen. Terminal coffee in hand.